preaching from the lectern rather than from the middle of the stage, where I can make better eye contact and flail my arms in gestures. I'm afraid my glasses did not come through. Probably should not have gone to Specsavers. I once heard in the bereavement study day some advice given to junior school teachers for what to do in the awful event of a child in their class dying. One of the suggestions was this: if a child in your class dies, don't let anyone else sit in that desk. You can't keep the desk forever as a memorial to that child. At the end of the school year, after the summer holidays, when everyone moves around and goes to new classrooms and new desks anyway, the desk will be reused. But meanwhile, it's important to show that the child can never be replaced, that he or she was treasured, is remembered, leaves a hole that cannot be filled. If a new child sits in that desk while the class still occupies the room, the other children may feel that their friend was too quickly forgotten and may even worry that they would be that easily replaced. Part of the reason we make this memorial today is the security that it gives us all. When facing a death in battle that you haven't asked for, being remembered is one of the few hopes left to cling to. And when we see that the dead are honoured and gratitude for their sacrifice is shown consistently and that they are remembered, we know we have reason to feel safe in that hope. It's a well-known saying that those who do not remember their past are condemned to repeat it. Perhaps you will have noticed that grieving families and friends are so often determined that tragedy will not be repeated, so fearful that lessons will not be learnt, that history will be repeated, that more lives will be senselessly wasted, that they strive to create a memorial that protects others from the same fate. Examples include the Stephen Lawrence Charitable Trust, the Susie Lamplew Trust, the Joe Cox Foundation, Claire Woods Law. The other reason for this ceremony of remembrance today is that the memory of such loss and sacrifice is kept alive, making it, one hopes, less likely that it will be repeated. The best memorial that we can give to those people who suffered and died in war is to end war. I noticed yesterday a trailer for another Second World War film called Midway, about the attack on Pearl Harbor, which brought America into the war. A film about an event made by people who never saw it. It makes war and bloodshed look very exciting. I'm not sure that more than 70 years after the war, this is the best way to keep in mind the horrid waste of human life. Just like I'm very uneasy when I hear people who clearly believe that the fact they won the war makes them superior, oblivious to the real price paid and by whom. My father, a telegraphist on a minesweeper, told me once that only madmen glorify war. Ex-service people don't. And it must be very distressing for them when people misunderstand the motives that lie behind this act of remembrance. Our reading today is one of the most famous passages in the Bible. It's chosen at many weddings, and it features in many Holy Communion services. It even features in the Monty Python film Life of Brian, where Jesus is heard preaching in the distance, and some of his words are being misheard and misunderstood. I must admit, I myself have for far too long misunderstood Jesus' most famous sermon, possibly in the same way as the crowds in Life of Brian misunderstood them. Please forgive the language as I quote, "Oh, it's the meek. Blessed are the meek. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? I'm glad they're getting something, because they have a hell of a time." People can easily hear the Sermon on the Mount as a comforting message for life's victims, for the downtrodden, for those who have a rotten life, that one day God will make it up to them. And although I rather think he will, unfortunately, when we read the words, "Blessed are the peacemakers," we can tend to smile weakly and say, "Oh, that's nice." But peacemaking is not nice. Peacemaking is messy and hard work. It takes time and a lot of emotional energy and courage. And let's be honest, peacemaking doesn't always work at first, because although it's something that everyone says they want, arguably, it's the most unnatural thing for the human race to do. People cry for it. They love to quote it. Many say, that's the real gospel. That's the real good news. To love your neighbour, to love your enemy, to do to others as you would have them do to you. Blessed are the peacemakers. This is the real message. Yet if everyone who enthused about it actually did it, we would have peace in all corners of the earth. First, let's dispel some misunderstandings about peacemakers. Peacemaking is not an absence of conflict. Peace in the Bible should not be confused with pacifism or the dodging of conflict. We are not instructed to run from conflict or to put our head in the sand hoping that conflict will end. For one thing, the peace that Jesus spoke of, shalom, is a broad term related to health, prosperity, harmony, wholeness. It means perfect welfare, serenity and fulfillment, freedom from trouble and liberation from anything which hinders, contentment. When the Jews said shalom, they were wishing on another, the presence, peace and prosperity of all the blessings of God. Peace in the Bible is always based on justice and righteousness. Where justice prevails and righteousness rules, there you will also have peace. But without those two virtues, lasting peace is not possible. The word to do or to make in the Bible is a word full of energy, demanding action and initiative. Someone has to actually drag combatants to the table and give them a reason to put down their arms. Notice also that Jesus did not say, "Blessed are the peace wishers," or "the peace hopers," or "the peace lovers," or "the peace talkers." The peace must be made. It never happens by chance. It never happens by leaving well alone or by minding my own business. A peacemaker takes the initiative. So when those two words come together, peacemaker, they describe not someone who avoids conflict, but someone who actively pursues peace. This seems difficult to achieve, but Jesus is not saying if you are a peacemaker, you will be a child of God. It's more like, if you are a child of God, you will be a peacemaker. Jesus gives a radical and costly command, a command which is the answer, the command to love. Not just those who are easy to love, but to love our enemies. "You have heard it was said," says Jesus, "love your neighbour and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Not just the ones it's easy to love you right back. This is a love which is not a response, it is a decision, it is a choice. Jesus clarifies, if you love only those who love you, what reward should you get? Don't even tax collectors do that? Elsewhere in his teaching, Jesus speaks of the love as the greatest commandment. And he puts his words into practice in his own outpouring of love in his death upon the cross. The cross is a symbol of all this. Jesus doesn't just speak generally about forgiveness. When he is crucified, he prays specifically for the men who are driving in the nails right there beside him. Let us choose this example and teachings of Jesus to properly honour the people whose sacrifice we remember today. Let us choose to be countercultural, to remember who we are, children of God, and therefore born to be peacemakers. First, let us make it a practice never ever to do something with the intent to hurt, no matter what the provocation. To a person's face, or behind their back, or on social media. And because I am a sinner, and I sometimes do act or speak or intend to hurt, an associated requirement is that I learn to apologise to that person and to God. Second, I must also learn to rein in my own reaction to others. Jesus said, when someone offends you, pray for them and ask God's blessing upon them. It is hard to ask God to bless a person without wishing good things for that person yourself, so this is a good exercise. And I should be willing to go first offering the hand of forgiveness and friendship again and again and again. The Christian, first and foremost, is a person of peace. Our calling is to be persons of peace. Lord, give us the desire and the strength and the courage to make our memorial for those who suffered and died and fell in conflict this peace. Amen.
Amen.